All right. We are in the middle of Perek Aleph of Shmuel Bet. We began Kinat David. We started last class at the very end to begin to explore the text of Kinat David. Did we read through the whole Kina? I think we read through the whole Kina once through. Yeah, we ran through it once through. I'm not anticipating that we're actually going to get to the rest of the Kina today. We might. But I want to finish our discussion on the introduction to the Kina, which is the first two psukim, psukim Yud Zayin and Yud Chet. Vayikonen David et hakina hazot al Shaul v'Yonatan beno. So right at the outset, we are told that this Kina is a lamentation Kina for the death of Shaul and Yonatan. And then, for some odd reason, the text takes us afield to more the context. Why? Why did he write this Kina? Why did he want this Kina? Vayomer lelamed b'nei Yehuda kashet hine ktuva al sefer hayashar. In order to teach b'nei Yehuda the keshet, keshet is a bow, in order to teach b'nei Yehuda keshet, and this is written on or inscribed in the Sefer HaYashar, the book of the just or straight or whatever, however you translate Sefer HaYashar. So we're told two things in this pasuk. We're told where this kina appears in the Sefer HaYashar, and we're told that the purpose of this kina is to teach B'nai Yehuda the skill of the bow. Now, briefly, we read through the Kina last week, and one of the mysteries in the Kina is the disconnect between the introduction and the rest of the Kina. What's the connection between teaching B'nai Yehuda the bow and the substance of this Kina? This Kina is a pure lament for the death of Saul and Yonatan. How does that teach B'nai Yehuda the bow? L'lamed B'nai Yehuda kashet. So we saw last week a couple of, and Bechlau, why is this an introduction to the Kina? Like, who cares? What does it have to do with teaching B'nai Yehuda the bow? So we saw a couple of possibilities. We looked last week at Rashi, Radak, and the Rabag, who link this notion of L'lamed B'nai Yehuda kashet somehow, tangentially or directly, to the death of Saul and Yonatan. Meaning, it's not so much the Kina that is the motivation for the lessons in archery, but the need for the Kina is the same need, was the same event that generates the need to teach to teach B'nai Yehuda the skills of war. Namely, the death of Saul and Yonatan creates in Israel a problem that needs to be resolved. Various possibilities of how to resolve it. Rashi suggests Lamed B'nai Yehuda Kashet Miatash and Aflu Gibore Yisrael Tzrichin B'nai Yehuda Lelamdan Melchama V'Limshach V'Kashet. Once we have already established that Shaul and Yonatan died and Israel lost the war, so we are vulnerable. And because we are vulnerable, it becomes necessary to teach B'nai Yehuda the skill of the bow. Radak suggestion is somewhat different. About Perushov, Yom Lamed Bnei Yehuda Kashet, Kodem Shechel Lekonen Alehem, Amar LaAnashav, Al Tityashu Min Atava VaAl Yerach Levavchem B'Mot Shaul V'Yonatan, Ki Keshet Melchama Biad Bnei Yehuda V'Alehem Hi HaGevura. The Radak links it a little more directly to the Kina itself as an introduction to the Kina. It's an introduction to the lament of the death of Saul and Yonatan. David turns to his people and he says, don't despair. Indeed, Yonatan and Shaul are gone, but don't despair. We're quite skilled in the ability of self-defense. L'lamed B'nai Yehuda Kashet, we've taught all of B'nai Yehuda the skill of the bow. They will take up the mantle of protecting Israel. So whereas Rashi sees the Kina, the motivation behind the for lack of a better term, the archery lessons, as a response to the death of Shaul and Yonatan. The Vedak sees it the other way around. The skill of the bow is already taught to Bnei Yehuda, and therefore a source of comfort to Israel, that they're still protected, much as the kina is a lament for Shaul. At the same time, we have the expression of comfort to Bnei to Israel. Those are the two possibilities. There's a third possibility that we saw, which is the Rabag. Vayomer lilamed bnei Yehuda kashet ba'avur shira'a ki mitat Shaul hayta b'sibat yirato mehamorim b'kashet, because we saw in the battle in Har Gilboa that Shaul was afraid of the archers. That was part of the story. Morim b'kashet v'lo ayu b'Yisrael mi sheya baki b'zeh, and the archery was a skill that Bnei Yehuda did not have. We saw that it was primarily the skill of Shevet Binyamin, who had most likely been in the battlefield with Shaul. Therefore, Amar David lelamed et Bnei Yehuda kashet kihum ehanivcharim shebeklei mechama. Therefore, he took up the task of teaching this skill of archery to Bnei Yehuda, who would have not had that skill because it was typically the role of Binyamin, whereas Bnei Yehuda fought with the Romach, with the spear. We saw the psukim to that effect in the chart just below. But therefore, in the absence and the loss of Shaul, we need to compensate by teaching Bnei Yehuda the skill of the archer. So in all three cases, the Mefarshim are trying desperately to link this lesson in archery to either the loss of the battle, either as a response to it, or as a source of comfort that it's not as desperate as we think, or connect to the kina by saying that we're lamenting the loss of Shaul and Yonatan, Bnei Binyamin. We therefore need to know that we have to compensate by involving Bnei Yehuda in that process of archery, which would have heretofore not been their skill. Those are the three mafarshim. We saw that at the end of the shiur last week. I'll kind of do a quick review of that, because that's where our conversation is going to begin. Yes?
But this whole thing doesn't really fit with what we already learned.
Which
that when, you know, the sorceress recalled Shmuel to talk to Shaul, Shaul already knew he was going to die in this battle.
Yeah.
And so it was like, you know, as far as that goes, it wasn't because, you know, he didn't have a great, you know, archery group with him. It was because of his sin.
That's true in a broader sense. I don't know if that's necessarily connected to the question of the Keshet. That's just true in general. Why did Shaul, why was he afraid in battle? Why does it say that he was Vayachal me'amorim b'kashet? Assuming it means he was afraid. We offered an alternative, but let's assume for a moment it means he was afraid. Why would he be afraid? He was told he was going to die in battle. It's true, but there comes a point at which you have a...
Let's say, because then you have the thing, we're not supposed to have too many horses, too many soldiers, right, too many this or that.
That doesn't say it does not say you can't have too many archers. I mean, you have to defend yourself somehow. You have to defend yourself somehow, right?
Okay, yeah, I'm not saying yeah, but it just, I mean, the whole idea.
You can't have too many slingshots. It's not going to work.
You know, that Hashem's with you. You know, if you're righteous, Hashem's with you. If he's not with you,
yeah,
doesn't matter what you have.
I think that there's an element, there's truth to that. On the other hand, it's also true that David raises the largest army and most skilled warriors in the history of Am Yisrael. So at some point or another, you have to do your...
It's a balancing act.
You have to do your ishtadlus and prepare for yourself. But in all cases, that's how the classic Mefarshim understand Vayomer lelamed bnei Yehuda kashet, that it is a response to the war or the loss of the war and the need to teach Bnei Yehuda the skill of the bow. The question we sort of left off with at the end of the discussion were two difficulties, textually, difficulties in this interpretation, in these interpretations. One is, what's the connection between the first half of the pasuk and the second? Vayomer lelamed bnei Yehuda kashet hinei ktuva al sefer hayashar. Sounds like, what's written in this Sefer HaYashar? What's written on Sefer HaYashar? either whatever it starts with, Vayomer Lulamed Yudak, Lulamed Bnei Yudak Kashet, Halohi Ktuva al Sefer Yeshar, teach Bnei Yudak the skill of the bow, that's written in the book of Sefer Yeshar, what's the connection? Right, that's one question.
Is
or
that,
Sefer
is that
Yeshar.
A book we know, and
so we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that in a second. Or it's Sefer Yeshar. Or it means that there are two different pieces. Right? Bnei Yudah Kasha, to teach Bnei Yudah the bow, that's the response to the war. And now let's go back to the subject of the Kina, and the Kina is written in Sefer Yeshar. Yeah. Okay, either way, the mystery, because I have a pasuk that seems to be dealing with two issues in a non sequitur. What does the Sefer, what does the Keshet have to do with Sefer Yeshar? And what do either one of them have to do with the Kina? And are we writing the Kina in this book, whatever this book is? Or are we writing the skill of the archer in this book? In which case, why is it here interjected between the description of the beginning of the Kina itself? Vayekonen David in Pasuk Yitzayin. Vayekonen David et HaKina Zot. David lamented, sang this lament. Oh, wait a second. But know that he taught Bnei Yudah the skill of the bow. It's written in the book of Yeshar. Now let's get back to the Kina, Hatzvi Yisrael.
But we don't even know what Sefer Yeshar
right.
is.
And we don't know what Sefer Yeshar is. So the Pasuk's a mystery. And the Pasuk's a mystery, and the Mefarshim is struggling with the question of all of these questions. What does it have to do with the battle? What does it have to do with the Kina? Why is it interjected in the middle of the introduction? What's going on? So I'm going to park the question of the bow, the keshet. I'm going to park it for a little bit, and let's turn our attention to Sefer HaYeshar and see where that leads us. So what is Sefer HaYeshar? Unfortunately for us, the phrase Sefer HaYeshar as a book appears in only two places in all of Tanakh. One is here, the other is an obscure reference in Sefer Yeshua. We'll come back to it a little bit later. Chazal are bothered by this question, and they're particularly bothered by the reference to a book that, you know, any book in Tanakh called Sefer HaYeshar? I have Sefer Shoftim, I have Sefer Shmuel, I have Sefer Yoshua, I have Sefer Breshit, I have Sefer Megillot, I have Tehillim. You know any book in Tanakh called Sefer HaYeshar?
Sefer HaYeshar.
It's not called Sefer HaYeshar.
No, but I'm saying usually that they reference Divrei Yamim.
Yeah, he's referencing Divrei Yamim. There's no reference to Divrei Yamim in Sefer Shmuel. The reference is Divrei Yamim in Sefer Malachim, but that's not the right, it's the wrong Divrei Yamim.
Is it in Shoftim also or no?
No. So we have a mystery. Who and what is Sefer HaYeshar? So when we have mysteries like this, what do you think happens? Typically, Chazal will try to explain it, or the Mefarshim will try to explain it, and they typically come up with
some answer.
Various answers. Right? Various answers. Some answers, but various answers. And again, that's partially because the challenge is so difficult, that kind of multiple answers in different directions in order to address this question. So take a look at the source on the bottom of the right-hand column of the source page. Right after, under the words Yinei Ketuva al Sefer HaYeshar, we have a Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah. Gemara quotes our pasuk and then begins my Sefer HaYeshar. What is this book? Gemara offers three possibilities, and it's interesting to watch how the Gemara comes to these conclusions. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan. First, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, said the following: Sefer HaYeshar. Ze Sefer Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. What's the Sefer Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov? Specifically?
Breshit.
That identification of Sefer HaYeshar with Breshit actually sticks. Rashi quotes it, Mefarshim quote it, and in a number of different introductions to Chumash, you'll see the Mefarshim talk about Sefer Breshit, which is called Sefer HaYeshar. Okay, there is this sort of midrashic interpretation that Sefer Breshit is called Sefer Yeshar. In that context, the book of the just, right, Yeshar here meaning just, Shenikru Yesharim. The Avot are called Yesharim, just. Dechtiv Bohu, and here we're quoting a pasuk from the Sefer in question, Tamut Nafshi Mot Yesharim V'Tiyach Ariti Kamo. Actually, That's a miss. That's an odd pasuk to quote, because that pasuk is in. Anybody recognize that pasuk? Tamot nafshi mot yishuim v'tiach chaviti kamo. It's not in Bereshit. It's actually in Bamidbar. Yeah, it's actually in Bamidbar. It's part of the bracha of Bilam. And Balak takes Bilam and says, "Curse B'nai Yisrael." And Bilam stands up and he says, "Let my death be the like theirs, the death of the righteous, the death of the just. Let my fate be like theirs." V'tiach chaviti kamo. And Balak gets all upset. How could you do this to me? Right. But what he's identifying is that B'nai Yisrael are called Yesharim. And the Avot, Avim Yitzchak Yaakov, are therefore the Yesharim. Sefer Yeshar is the book of the story of the birth of the Jewish people, the story of the birth of Israel. Okay, so Sefer Bereshit is Sefer Yesharim. What's the connection to this pasuk? V'heicha b'miza, Yehuda, ata yaducha achicha yaducha ba'oref oivecha. And the bracha that God gives, the bracha that Yaakov gives to Yehuda. Remember the first half of this pasuk that we're dealing with. Vayomer lelamed bnei Yehuda kashet, to teach bnei Yehuda the bow. Says the pasuk when Yaakov is blessing his children, the bracha he gives to Yehuda is, "You will lead your brethren. Your hand shall be against the back of the necks of your enemies." Yadcha be'oref oivecha. The oref is the back of the neck. Tzavar is the front of the neck. The oref is the back of the neck. Ezohi milchama shetzricha yad keneged oref. In what kind of battle does your hand reach the back of the neck of your enemy? Havi omer, it's a keshet. That's the bow. When you shoot the bow and it
hits, in the back.
It hits your enemy, the back of the neck. And therefore, when Yaakov gives a bracha to his children, to Yehuda in particular, and he talks about Yehuda's skill in battle, he talks about Yehuda's skill in battle as Yadcha ba'oref oivecha. That's the keshet, and that's why Sefer Yashar is referred to as Sefer Bereshit. In Sefer Bereshit, we learn that Yaakov teaches Yehuda the bow. Come back to our pasuk. Vayomer, says David, Lelamed b'nei Yehuda kashet. We learn that Bnei Yehuda learned the skill of the bow. Where do we learn that from? Halak Tuvah b'Sefer Yashar. It says so in Sefer Bereshit. What does it say in Sefer Bereshit? That Yaakov blessed Yehuda with the skill of the bow. You follow that the rationale? All right. Option one. Option two.
I don't like it.
Well, option two.
You have some other options, Sonny. I hope I like that one better.
Sefer, I'm skeptical. Sefer Hayashar, Zeh Sefer Mishnah Torah. Sefer Hayashar, says Rabbi Eliezer, is Sefer Mishnah Torah. What's Mishnah Torah? Which part of Chumash is Mishnah Torah? Dvarim. Sefer Dvarim is called Mishnah Torah because it's a repeat or review of Chumash. The Amai Karo Sefer Yashar, why is that Sefer called the Book of the Just? Because in it is contained the Pasuk, Tichtiv Yasita Yashar Vato B'nei Hashem. It to summarize the message of Sefer Dvarim, the message is, do that which is just and right in the eyes of God. Yasita Yashar Vato B'nei Hashem. But where does the Lamed B'nei Yehuda Kashet come in? Nehecha Remiza, says the Pasuk, Yadav Rav Lo, in the bracha of Moshe in Vezot Bracha, he refers to V'yadav Rav Lo V'eze Mitzarav. What's the end of that pasuk? Vezot Yehuda. Remember, we're talking about Yehuda. Lelamed Yehuda Kashet. Vizot Yehuda, Vayomar, Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda Be'elamot Avienu. Listen, Yehuda, to the voice of, or listen, God, to the voice of Yehuda, who will lead his people. Yadav Ravlo, strong is his hand. Ve'ezer Mitzarav Tia, and he will be an assistant, assisting them from his enemies. Ezehi Mechama Shetzicha Shtei Adayim, Yadav Ravlo, two hands, his hands will be mighty. In what kind of armory do you need? Two hands, a sword you fight with, one hand, a spear you use with, one hand. And what kind of military tool do you need two hands for? Have your mare, sukkashet. So both in Breshit and in Dvarim, we have a bracha to Yehuda, which on some level could be understood to refer to the skill of the bow. Vayomer lelamed b'nei Yehuda kashet. That's written in Sefer HaYashar, a.k.a. either Sefer Breshit or Sefer Dvar. All right, Sonny, you like that one better? Third option. Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachmeni omer, Sefer HaYashar, ze Sefer Shoftim.
What else?
Right? Has to be Sefer Shoftim. Why does it have to be Sefer Shoftim? V'amai kor le Sefer HaYashar. Why is it called the Book of the Yashar? Because what does it say in Shoftim? Recurring theme at the end of Sefer Shoftim four times. Bayamim mehem ein melech b'Yisrael ish kol le Yashar b'enav yasa. Because it says that no king of Israel, everybody did what was Yashar in their own eyes. So where does the teaching B'nei Yehuda Kashat come to in Sefer Shoftim? V'heicha remiza. It says at the very beginning of Sefer Shoftim, Leman dat dorot B'nei Yisrael l'lamdam milchama. That the reason why the nations of Canaan remained in the land of Israel, amongst the many reasons, one of them that is given, is to train Israel and the generations to come in the skill of war. What kind of military tactics or skills require lessons? We have to teach. Have you ever kashet? Because the bow is not something you can just pick up and shoot. An arrow you can just, a spear you can throw. A sword you can thrust. A bow requires a certain skill. L'lamed b'nei Yehuda milchama. Okay. Three options. Sefer HaYashar is the book in which we learn a common thread to all of these three interpretations. Right, common to all three of these interpretations, what's the relationship between Sefer HaYashar and the lessons in archery, L'lamed b'nei Yehuda kashet? What's the connection?
That you have to learn how to use the bow.
Right, that the book of Sefer Yashar is the book in which it tells us that B'nai Yehuda were learning the lessons of archery. Vayomer lamed B'nai Yehuda kashet halohi k'tuva b'Sefer Yashar. In other words, what's written in Sefer Yashar, according to the Gemara, is not the kina. What's written in Sefer Yashar is
the instruction.
The instruction in archery. Vayomer lamed B'nai Yehuda kashet halohi k'tuva b'Sefer Yashar. And the options for Sefer HaYashar are limited to Breshit, Dvarim, and Shoftim, because those are the three books in which we find any kind of reference to the lessons of war, the skills of war. I would go one step further and argue that Sefer HaYashar, according to Chazal, has to be somewhere in Tanakh. Because?
We're in Tanakh?
Because it's not, because Chazal had a perspective that it's not possible for Tanakh to reference a book that we don't have. Right, so if the Navi is telling me this is written in Sefer Yashar, if I don't have Sefer Yashar, what value is there for it to be telling me that this is written in Sefer Yashar? You follow? And it has to be something I would have a frame of reference for. And of the three possibilities, Breshit, Dvarim, and Shoftim, if you had to pick one, if I backed you up against the wall and said, okay, your only three options. I'm not going to do that because I'm going to give you two more. But if these are the only three options, which of them would you choose?
Breshit.
Why?
One, it comes early on. And two, at least, Avram, Yaakov, and Yitzhak are Yisharim.
Right. Okay.
And Shoftim.
Shoftim's a little bit out to lunch. Okay. It also changes the meaning of the word Yashar. Because Sefer Yashar and Breshit refers to those who are just. Mm-hmm. Sefer Yashar and Dvarim refers to a book that teaches me how to be just. And Sefer Yashar in Shoftim means a book of lawlessness. Right? A book in which there's no justice, right? Yishi Yashar Beinav Yaseh. So it's the translation of Sefer Yashar changes based on which book I'm talking about. So of the three, I think Rashi would agree with you. You look at Rashi on the top of the next column. Rashi on the pasuk Halohiktuva b'Sefer Hayashar states clearly Halohiktuva al Sefer Breshit Shehi Sefer Yesharim Avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov, and he continues to quote the Gemara verbatim that Sefer Yashar is Breshit. Rashi, as is often does, Rashi will take a Gemara that has three opinions and will quote only one of those three opinions. Hmm. Why? Because he's selectively choosing the one he felt was closest to Pshat. We have a tendency to look at Rashi as a kind of a mix between Pshat and Drash. Rashi quotes Midrashim all the time. We have this perception. The Rishonim saw Rashi as a Pashtan. Okay, the Rishonim saw Rashi as an attempt to draw attention to the Pshat, relying on Medrash perhaps more than they were comfortable with, and so they offered alternative interpretations very often to kind of work through the Pshat without reliance on Midrashim. But there's no question that they saw Rashi in the light of somebody who's looking for the Pshat, even if he's relying on Midrashim. There is a very famous book written by Nechama Leibowitz. It was actually a university course that she wrote for the Open University in Israel, University of Haftucha. It's a two-volume work on the methodology of Rashi. It's really an extraordinary work. She has one whole chapter devoted to the use of Rashi's methodology in selectively quoting Midrashim. And what Rashi will do very subtly is he'll sometimes take a medrash that will quote three or four different opinions and selectively choose only one because he felt somehow that was closer to the pshat than the other two. Or he'll move a medrash from one place to another, or he'll rework the language of the medrash. It's a different methodology that Rashi had in kind of navigating midrash. So in this case, Rashi chose a particular interpretation of the three, limited to the three in Chazal. In other words, Rashi wasn't going to veer beyond that which Chazal assumed, which is that Sefer Yashar has to be a book we are
familiar with,
a book that we know, a book that's in Tanakh. Of the options, Rashi chose, because he preferred, the interpretation of Breshit, which describes the story of the people in Breshit as the ones who are just, Sefer Hayesha. All right. On the other hand, again, it's somewhat of a challenge. The challenge is exacerbated by the fact that Sefer Yashar does have another reference in Tanakh. There's one other place where Sefer Yashar is mentioned, and none of these interpretations would resolve the meaning of the word Sefer Yashar in that context. What is the other context of reference to Sefer Yashar? The phrase appears twice in all of Tanakh. Once by us, and once in Sefer Yehoshua. So take a look in source. I'm going to come back to the Rabbag in a moment. Take a look at the source just beneath Rashi. Sorry, I didn't number these. You have two quotes from the Rabbag. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
And then underneath that is a series of psukim from Sefer Yehoshua. I could show it to you in the text, but it's easier here. As yedaber Yehoshua l'Hashem b'yom tet Hashem etet mori lifnei b'nei Yisrael v'yomar l'enei Yisrael. Yehoshua said these words in the day that God gave him gave the Amorites over into his hands, and he said before all of Israel, Hashemesh b'giv'on dom v'yareach b'emek ayalon, let the sun in Giv'on stand still, let the moon in the valley of Ayalon be still, v'yidom Hashemesh v'yareach amad, the sun was silent, the moon stood, Ad yikom goy oivav, until the nation can vanquish its enemies. Halohi k'tuva al sefer ha-yashar. that which is written on in the book of the just. That's the only other reference to Sefer Yesha. It didn't bother the Rabbah. It bothered Chazal. Because Chazal were not comfortable with a book in Tanakh referenced that we don't have. But it's precisely what didn't bother the Rabbah. And that's, if you take a look at the Rabbah, just above this quote, Rabbah Yeshua Perek Yud, V'inei Sefer HaYashar, Achshov, my thought is, Sheya Nikrakach V'avad Imagalut. That was a book we had, but with the exile in the course of time, we lost it.
I mean, there were books written like the kings had their own chronicles that were lost.
Correct. We have a whole reference to Sefer Divrei Hayamim L'Malchei Yehuda, which we don't have. The book we have of Divrei Hayamim Divrei Hayamim L'Malchei Yisrael, Divrei Hayamim L'Malchei Yehuda. The reference to the Book of Chronicles, we have a Book of Chronicles, but I don't think it's the same one that is referred to in Sefer Malachim. So it's certainly possible. Rabbi is saying there was such a book, and in the course of time, in the course of the exile, in Magalot, it was lost. What's in this Sefer HaYashar, we'll never know. Because the only thing we know is the places where it says that this is written, this is recorded in the Book of Sefer HaYashar, but we don't know what's in it. He makes a similar comment on our pasuk in Shmuel Bet, in the source just above. Hinei Sefer Yashar lefi ma she'echshov Sefer haya mifursam etzlam. This was a known book. They had a book. They knew about it. Sefer Yashar. We don't have it. We lost it.
There's no reference to it. Is there like a Sefer Yetzirah or something that says
there is a Sefer Yetzirah that's attributed to the Adam HaRishon. Again, when he gets to these kind of how historically accurate is it that Adam HaRishon wrote a Sefer called Sefer Yetzirah? I'm recording public context here, so I will refrain from saying too much. But by Miriam, it doesn't say Sefer Shirah. It just says that she sang. There's no reference to a sefer there. I do not believe, I'll tell you in a moment. ותיקח מים הנביאה אחות אהרון את הטוף בידה ותצאנו כל אנשים אחרי בטובים ובמחולות ותן להם מרים שיעור להשם כי גו גאס וסולף כל המוויה. That's it. There's no reference to the Sefer there. But nonetheless, it is a mystery as to what happened to this book. What is it? A book that was lost. It's not not impossible, by the way. There are other places where we have, although oddly, I'm not sure why Chazal don't make the same observation there. There are other places where we have references to books that we don't have anymore. I'll show you another example. Take a look in Bamidbar Perak Chaf Aleph. Actually, it's also on the source page. You can do it there too. Bamidbar, skip the next one back. Bamidbar Chaf Aleph, Al Ken Yi Amar Besefer Milchamot Hashem. Et Vahev Besufa Vet Nechalim Arnon Ve Eshed Hanechalim Ashenatal Ashevet Ar Venishan Lekvu Moab. The reference here is to the battles of Moshe against Sichon and the beginning of the conquest of the east side of the Yarden, conquest of Sichon and Og. But there's a reference to Sefer Mechamot Hashem, the book of the battles of God. Again, the Mefarshim struggle with what it means. Some say it just means Chumash, which is recording all the battles of Bnei Israel. Others say, no, it's a book we don't have. Sefer Mechamot Hashem. It is entirely possible. On the other hand, I'll share with you the possibility, another approach altogether. And the reason why I'm looking for another approach is because I still don't have a resolution to the bigger question, which is, what on earth does Sefer Yashar and the Lamed Bnei Yehuda Kashat have to do with each other? And why is this in the introduction, inserted into the middle of the introduction of the Kina? Right? I still don't have an answer to that question. So, I'll share with you a third possibility. And to understand, the third possibility has to, or at this point it's the fifth possibility. Right? Three in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Ralbag says it's a sefer that's lost. So we have Breishit, Devarim, Shoftim, lost.
Now.
Right? Now a fifth possibility. Let's go back to the Pesukim in Yehoshua for a minute. Okay? And you have the Pesukim here. You don't remember the context of the Pesukim in Yehoshua? Shemesh b'givon dom v'yareach me'emek ayalon v'yidom ha'shemesh v'yareach hamad ad yikom goy oivav. Remember the context?
That's an introductory to some war, but I don't
it's
know.
It's actually the summary of some war.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Remember the story?
Are they crossing the Yarden?
No.
This is Emek Ayalon. Isn't that like near where Goliath, you know, David and Goliath
Yeah, but not connected. Take a look at Yeshua Perek Yud. From Seba?
Yes,
Yeshua Perek Yud. Yeshua Perek Yud, amongst the various battles of Yeshua, was a united alliance to fight against the Givonim. Because Yeshua had made a deal with the Givonim. Remember the deal? The Givonim had disguised themselves and come to Yeshua to make a pact with him. And then they made this deal that if either one was attacked, the other would come to the raid. And in the end, a bunch of kings gathered together against the Givonim in order to defend Israel, in order to attack the Givonim for making a pact with Israel. So you have in Perek Yud, for example, Pasukei v'yasfu v'yalu chameshet malchei ha'emori melech Yerushalayim, melech Hebron, melech Yarmut, melech Lachish, melech Eglon, heim v'chom machanehem yachnu al Givon v'yalachamu aleh. Five kings all got together to wage war against the Givonim. V'yishlechu anshe Givon al Yoshua al machaneh ha'gilgal alemor al teref yadecha mi'avadecha ale aleinu me'ira v'hoshian v'hoshia lanu v'azreinu. Givonim sent a message to Yoshua saying, don't abandon us, you promised to help us, we're being attacked by five different kings, melech Yerushalayim, melech Hebron, melech Yarmut, melech Lachish, melech Eglon. Five different cities are coming to attack us, we need your help. So So Yeshua gathers his army from Gilgal. This is back into the world of Yeshua. It's been a while since we reviewed Yeshua. Yeshua gathers all his armies and he goes to fight in defense of the Givonim against the five alliance of the five kings. ויאמר השם אל יהושע אל תירא מהם כי בידך נתתים ליעמוד איש מהם בפניך. God says to Yeshua, don't be afraid, this is by design, you're going to be victorious, you're going to be successful. ויבוא עליהם יהושע פתאום כל הלילה עלה מן הגלגל. Yeshua all night long comes from Gilgal up the hills, up the mountains to Giv'on, which is just north of Yerushalayim, area of Telstone today. They smite them with a great battle, with a great victory. They chase him down the mountain, down into the valley. As they're coming down, as they're running, Heim b'morad Beit Choron. They're coming down the slope of Beit Choron. V'Hashem ishlich aleihem avanim gdolot min ha'shamayim ad azeka v'yamutu. And this, either hailstones or rocks falling. Right, they're fighting their enemies. They're chasing their enemies, and there's rocks falling out of the heavens. Like hail. More people die by the hail than die by the sword.
See? You don't need Tasha then. Right? You just need hail.
Now we come to Pasuk Bet. Az yedaber Yoshua la'Hashem, then spoke Yoshua to God, b'yom tet Hashemet Amori lifnei b'nei Yisrael, the day that God gave the Amorites into his hands, v'yomer, and he said, l'nei Yisrael, shemesh b'givon dom, v'yareach b'emek ayalon. The sun in Givon shall stand, shall be silent, shall stop, and the moon in the valley of Ayalon, right, if the sun is in Givon, the moon is in Emek Ayalon, they should stop, they should stand still. Vayidom HaShemesh, and indeed the sun stood quiet, Vayareach Amad, and the moon didn't move, Ad Yikom Goy Oivav, until the nation would vanquish its enemies. Ha'alohi Ktuba Al Sefer HaYashar, this is recorded in the Sefer HaYashar. Vayamod HaShemesh B'chatzi HaShemayim, the sun stood in the middle of the sky, V'lo Atz Lavok Yom Tamim, and did not complete its circuit like it usually does. A day unprecedented in the annals of human history, that God would listen to the voice of man, because God was fighting for Israel. Beautiful story, famous miracle of the sun standing still for Yeshua in the battle of Gibeon. And the sun stands still, so does the moon, because they are in circle orbit together. Comes along the Rabag and makes the following observation. How big was this miracle?
Big.
Right? Think about the significance of stopping the sun in its orbit. We who understand a little bit of the science of astronomy, and imagine the magnitude of what it would mean to stop a sun in its orbit, or to stop the Earth spinning on its axis, one or the other. You don't have to actually stop the sun, you can just stop the Earth spinning. But if you stop the Earth spinning, lots of things are going to happen. Today's ice would look like a child's play to compare to the calamity that would befall the Earth if you stopped the Earth spinning. Right? A difficult concept to understand. Comes along the Rabag and says the following. Mamar Yoshua haya sheterem shiyasu ha-shemesh miyot al givon vayareach miyot al emek hayalon tishalem nikmat goy oivav. What Yeshua meant is that God should enable them to destroy their enemies before the sun set. Let me do that again. What Yeshua meant was, Terem Shiasu HaShemesh Miyot Al Givon, before the sun would set over Givon, God would enable them to Shalem Nikmat Ko Evav, to finish the job of vanquishing their enemies. In other words, did the sun physically stand still, according to the Rabag?
No.
What it means is
that
the battle would be expedited. Mm-hmm. That they would be able to finish the battle before the day set, the sun would set. More or less, an explanation as to why God came to assist with the hailstones. Aval kitzer hakatuv bazeh, the text of the Tanakh kind of shortens the story. V'yorel ze ma she'ma acharav, v'yidom ha-shemesh, v'yareach amad, ad yukom goy oivav. And it's reflected in that tefillah of Yoshua that God, that he made, that says, oh God, let me finish this battle before the sun sets. Right? We don't have a record of that tefillah, but we have the aftermath description of that tefillah in these words of Yoshua. V'haratzon b'ze, shekvar dimem ha-shemesh b'givon v'yareach b'emek ha-yalon. It's not a request God should stop. It's describing what has already occurred. Ad shenishlama ha-melacha me'anakama. V'zeh haya inyan nifla. It's a wondrous thing. Ki lo dai shi'ad shenyinakamu Yisrael me'akamim alehem. It's not only that they testified that we were victorious against their enemies. Aval ya'adim zeh shezot ha-nakama t'sholem b'zman katzar. But it also means that this is all achievable in a very short period of time, before the day sun set. Okay? Now, with the Rabag, I've given you a small quote of a very long Rabag. the total context of this Rabag is Rabag goes to war, figuratively, against all those who take this story of this miracle literally. He says, it's not conceivable that we could have a miracle of the magnitude of the sun standing still and the orbit of the earth stopping. It's just scientifically, and that the world would collapse. Rabag was a scientist. Rabag was very well versed in the astronomy of the day. He says, it's too big a miracle, cosmic size miracle, for it to have been so nonchalantly recorded in the story of Yeshua. He therefore understood this to mean Yeshua is in the middle of the battle. The battle is raging, right? Battle is going, and Yeshua is concerned that if this battle doesn't finish now today, while in daylight, what's going to happen when it turns nighttime?
I'll keep going.
Right, we're going to give everybody a chance to regroup. We're going to lose the momentum. We're chasing our enemies. If we let them regroup overnight, we're going to lose that potential victory. We're talking about five different armies. And so to Yeshua, it's critically important that this battle be completed today. And hence Rabag says that's what his tefillah was. Shemesh b'kivon dam doesn't mean to stop the sun in its tracks. It means allow me to accomplish more in the course of the next 6 hours than would typically be doable in a day. Okay?
That was a miracle.
And that was the miracle. Fine.
Hello.
Miracle of note, miracle of worth.
Hello.
Hail coming down from heaven to assist.
Hello.
Fine. All good? So what do I do with this psukim? Shemesh begivon dom v'yareach be'emek ayalon v'yidom ha-shemesh v'yareach amad ad yikom ko'evav. Very famous psukim. And Yeshua stopped the sun. The sun stood. How many of us have heard the miracle of Yeshua made the sun stand still? Right? So what do I do with these psukim?
It's poetic.
So here the Rabag doesn't say it, but clearly these psukim are written not as a description of the battle or description in real time of what Yeshua is asking for, but this Rabag does say, it's a description after the fact of what was already the victory. So after the fact, when you describe a victory that has taken place in a perceived miraculous fashion, we have a name for that. What do we call it?
Exaggeration.
No. I'm not being cynical. I'm being very serious. Right? In the context of Tanakh, when we talk about a description after the fact of a battle that we want to attribute to miraculous hand of God, what do we call that description?
Hallel?
We have it many places in Tanakh.
Hallel?
Hallel is a name for a general expression of thanksgiving, but specific to an expression of thanksgiving for a victory that has just occurred. I'll give you a clue. Look at the language of Pasuk Yud Bet. Az yidaber Yeshua la'ashem.
Shira.
Right? How does... correct. How does Shira Tvora begin? Right, as also begins with the word as, correct? Vatasha devora uvarak benavinom bayom uhu lemor. Or Shirat Hayam, as Yashir Moshe v'nei Yisrael. As yidaber Yoshua la'ashem, as Yashir Moshe v'nei Yisrael. Shira. Right? This is Shira. And the text of this description of the sun standing still reads not like, that's what you said, poetry. It doesn't read like the story reads. It reads like Shira would read. That's why I laid it out in the form of Shira. Shemesh b'givon dom, v'yareach v'emak ayalon, v'yidom ha-shemesh, v'yareach amad, ad yikom goy evav. It reads like Shira. It reads like a song of thanksgiving. It might be short, there might be more to it, but it reads like a song of thanksgiving. And if it reads like a song of thanksgiving, look what happens next. Halohi k'tuva al Sefer HaYashar. What's written in Sefer HaYashar?
Shira.
The Shira.
All the Shira? I mean, everybody?
So we don't know.
Too bad we lost it.
Right? But, right? Beautiful book of poetry, right? We have the phrase Sefer HaYashar twice in all of Tanakh. Once, a reference to Shirat Yehoshua Shemesh B'Givondom, and the other reference to Kinat David, a form of Shira. Different kind of Shira, but nonetheless, right? The opposite of Shira. Shira is a song of victory in a battle. Kina. The opposite of Shira is Kina. Yeah, right? So now, and I didn't bring up my board, so I can't do this on my whiteboard, but this I heard from Rav Medan. This is really wild. What if Sefer HaYashar is not Sefer HaYashar? But what is Sefer HaYashar is another way of describing as, finish the phrase, as Yashir.
So it's Hashir.
So they're just missing it.
So maybe Sefer HaYashar means Sefer HaShira.
Uh-huh.
As Yashir gives the name of the title of the book. The book is a book of Az Yashir, Sefer HaYashir, Sefer HaYashar, Sefer HaShira. Right? And it's not about a book that was lost. It's about a recording of or a record of, and we have them in Tanakh, a record of the collection of the Shira of Tanakh. Az Yashir, Az Yedaber, Vatashar Dvara. Shirat David, Vayikonen David, Ketuva b'Sefer HaYashar, Sefer HaYashir, Sefer HaShira. So that was a chiddush I heard from Rav Medan, and I find it very compelling because it answers one of the great mysteries. And let's come back to our text, which is Shmuel Bet Perek Aleph. I'm gonna pull together two different chidushim that I heard, one from Rav Medan and one from Rav Amnon Bazak, kind of pull them together, and I think they actually end up in the same place, which is really very powerful. To come back to Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Chet. Vayukonen David et hakina hazot. David lamented this lament for the death of Shaul and Yonatan, al Shaul va Yonatan beno, vayomer. And he said, what did he say? Forget for a moment the keshet. Okay, what did he say? I assume if I start by yikonen David et hakina hazot al Shaul va Yonatan beno, I assume the next phrase should be vayomer. The beginning of the Kina, right? That's where our mystery began. I should say, "Vatasha dvara uvarak ben Avinom vatoma." As Yeshir Moshe bnei Yisrael tishra azot bnei Yisrael leimor. Vayikonen David at the Kina azot ashauv vayonatam beno vayomer. I would assume that should be the beginning of the Kina. Suddenly, I have this interjection. Open parentheses, Lamed b'nu Yehuda kasha, the purpose of this is to teach Israel. I have no idea what that means. So leave that phrase out for a second. But hinei ketuva al sefer ha-yashar, sefer ha-shira. This is shira, this is kina, this is lament. Sefer ha-yashar. And now beginning, so that phrase fits in to the context of the beginning. Vayomer ketuva, alohi ketuva al sefer ha-yashar. You wrote this kina, and it was so powerful, it was worthy of being recorded in the book of Shira. Sefer Yesha. Fine. That would fit, except for the problem of Vayom Lamed B'nei Yehuda Kashet, right? And every interpretation we've seen of Lamed B'nei Yehuda Kashet has been about teaching B'nei Yehuda the archery and the skill of war. It doesn't fit. Vayekonen, lament. Kina, lament. Yashar, shira, song. Lilamed, to teach. Right. Where's the keshet? Where's the bow in the story? Could be a rainbow. It's possible. But I'll show you something really interesting. Very, very interesting. Kina, Shira, Hallel, all different forms of song, all part of the personality and prolific writing of whom?
David.
If there's anybody who writes poetry in Jewish life, it's David. Ne'im Zmirot Yisrael. David is a, like, that's his core, right? That's what Sefer Tehillim is about. Sefer Tehillim, mostly, not all of it, but a lot of it, are books written by, right, or Tehillot, written by
David.
So I'll show you something very interesting. I've given you, on the bottom of the page, a bunch of different introductory phrases to Tehillim. There are many, many, many more. But I've given you a handful. Lam Natzeach Ringinot Mizmole David. Perek Dalet. What does that mean?
That's the introductory line to the
Right. So what does it mean? Translate it.
The conductor.
So first of all, Menatzeach, and so many of Pekei Tehillim begin with the phrase Lam Natzeach.
Yeah.
What does Lam Natzeach mean?
For the conductor.
For the conductor. Who's a conductor? What's a
conductor? The musical director.
Huh? Musical director. What are you talking about? An orchestra here? Is there a sheet of music?
I would say the Levim. Didn't the Levim say
a sheet of music to the conductor? Lam Natzeach. What is an instruction? Are you writing a musical score?
I think this is a hint to how you're supposed to sing the song.
Maybe. I don't know. Mystery. Lam Natzeach. For the conductor. Right? Menatzeach is a conductor. Bin ginot mizmole David. Mizmole David means? Song of David, right? If this perek started mizmole David, we wouldn't have an issue. What's lam natzeach bin ginot? To the conductor with?
Notes.
The tunes. Notes, tunes, musical, negina, mangina. Okay. What kind of notes? What kind of musical instruments? What kind of neginot? Answer, we don't know.
We no longer know.
We don't have a clue. Lam Natzeach min ginot mizmor leDavid. That's Perek Dalet. How does Perek Hey begin? Lam Natzeach al hanichilot mizmor leDavid. To the conductor over the nichilot.
I don't know
what a nichilot? No idea. But whatever it is, it's something connected to the Menatzeach and something connected to the Neginot. Because the next two words are Mizmor David. Mizmor David is where the psalm begins. So the first two words, L'Menatzeach Menginot, L'Menatzeach Ela Nechilot, is somehow connected to
the song.
The musical structure of this parak.
Yeah.
Lam Natzeach, here's the instructions to the conductor. This Tehillah, this Mizmor, is to be sung or to be accompanied by or to be written for the Neginot or for the Nechilot. Whatever that means. Instrument that is. Here's another one. Perek Vav. Next Perek. Literally, these are like one after the other. Dalet, Hey, Vav. Lam Netzeach bin ginot al hashminit. To the conductor of the neginot on the shminit. Mizmor David.
That was helpful.
Okay? Now, the only thing we know about the shminit is that it's a musical instrument that contained
eight strings.
These aren't notes. These are strings. Okay? So the shminit is a musical instrument that had an eight-string, whether it was a percussion instrument or whether it was a harp or a flute or something. We don't know. But shminit had something to do with eight strings. Nechilot. Lametzeach ala gitit is the next one. These are different kinds of perek yudbet. Lametzeach ala shminit. I'm just reading out of Perek Tehillim. Okay, lam natzeach ala shminit, lam natzeach on the eight-string instrument. Lam natzeach, how many begin with the word lam natzeach? Right, almost everything. Lam natzeach ala yalat hashachar. The conductor over some Ayelet HaShachar, morning dawn, typically. I have no idea what kind of instrument it is. Again, these were different parts of the musical structure of Sefer Tehillim, which we don't have anymore, but we have hints to the fact that they existed. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm going to show you one more. This is also on the page. Lam Natzeach al Shushan Edut. Perek Samach Aleph is Lam Natzeach al Neginat LeDavid. Again, we're back to the same Neginat, Neginot. We don't know what these are. Lam Natzeach al Shushan Edut Michtam LeDavid LeLamed. Right, to the conductor in Shushan, about Shushan, Edut, Michtam LeDavid, LeLamed. To teach. What is? To teach the instruction to that guide. LeLamed here is not to teach, to instruct in the sense of sitting down and learning a lesson, but rather, LeMnatzeach, LeLamed. What does a conductor do?
Teach the music.
Right, he teaches, he guides, he conducts, he controls, right? Lelemed. In other words, all of the Pirkei Tehillim always start with some kind of introductory statement about the musical context, instruction, instrument, lesson, lamnatzeach, lelemed, neginot, shminit, nachalim, nachalot. Is it such a stretch to consider a musical instrument that looked like a bow called a keshet?
No, I didn't think of that. Oh, that's interesting.
Like the harp that he played?
Right. Right. And now suddenly, the story of Kinat David has nothing to do with teaching Bnei Yehuda the war and trying to respond to the war, and they were afraid of the arrows and
right.
Teaching archers. Nothing to do with archery. Now go back and reread two psukim together. And now, if you pull together this chiddush of Rav Meidan about Sefer Yashar and this chiddush of Rav Bazak about the Lelamed Bnei Yehuda Kashet, suddenly the whole introduction starts differently. Right? Vayikonen David et hakina hazot. David lamented this kina, sang this lament. Al Shaul v'Yonatan b'no, for Shaul and Yonatan's and his son Yonatan. Vayomer, and he said, Lulamed b'nei Yehuda kashet, to teach, to instruct, to guide this lament with the accompaniment of the bow. Hi k'tuval sefer yashar, written in the annals and the books of Shirav, of Song of Israel. Hatzvi Yisrael, and we go on from there. And then it's not an interjection, it doesn't break the flow. It's part of the two psukim that are an introduction to the shira / kina of David. It's a contemporary interpretation. I find it extraordinary.
Makes a lot more sense than the other thing.
But again, there's a lot of stretch in this because you have to translate Yashar to Shira and you have to go to Keshet from the archery to the. It's a lot of stretch. It's a lot of plan words. But I think in the context of the story, in the context of the parak, it actually is very powerful. And it reflects, I think, a little bit more the mood of David. At this moment when he just heard about the fall of Shaul and Yonatan, and he killed the person who just told him about it because he was so distraught. And now to start talking about we're going to go out and teach everybody how to shoot a gun, right? We're going to run everybody down to the to the shooting range because we're going to teach them how to, right, because we have to win the war. But then we're going to come back and sing shoot. Like it doesn't flow. Whereas if you think about it from the perspective of pulls out his harp. Lamed b'nei Yehuda kashet. He brings them all together. And says, I'm going to teach you a song. Right?
That's sent to David.
Right, to David. He teach you a song. Pulls out his harp. Pulls out his keshet, and starts to sing. Hatzvi Yisrael al b'matecha chalal ech naflu giborim.
That makes more sense.
Al k'tuvav al sefer hayashar sefer hashira. All right. That we will.
Sounds like typical.
Sunny, that's much better.
It does.
Sunny, isn't
yeah.
that much better?
Yeah, I get better.
That's much better.
All right. Okay. We will adjourn here. Bezvat Hashem. Bezvat Hashem. It is snowing.
It's snowing.
Yes, it's snowing.
It's snowing.
But you're probably laughing.